What's up, everyone? Welcome to another edition of the Mongols podcast. I'm Mike. He's Kev. Coming up, let's go.
Can you believe that, guys?
No, I mean, that is one of the craziest sequence of events we've seen in quite a period of time.
In the top right corner, gentlemen, up to the middle, back to Kerr.
So, Kev, a few housekeeping things to get out of the way before we get into the big topic that everybody's talking about. Just wanted to give a shout-out to Ollie, Thomas, and Ezra, who are either on their way to practice or back from practice. We hear you guys like listening to the podcast in the car. So, thanks for listening. Keep on keeping on. Good luck at practice, or hopefully it went well. Second point, we apologize that this podcast is coming out 24 hours later than you usually expect it. As I mentioned on Twitter, there was a bit of a scheduling conflict at the last minute, so we had to delay it. Of all people, I was getting trolled by our mother. I get a text today. I go on Twitter last night and I say, sorry, it's going to be late. I get a text from mom today going, what, no Sunday night podcast? And I'm like, really? Like, of all people, of all people. So thanks, mom. Here's your podcast.
She's a, you know, tough critic. 24 hours late. Nope, not worth it. Can't.
Not,
it has to
not
be
acceptable.
On time.
Yeah, she's moving on to listen to Ask Me Another or some other show. We're done. It's over. All right. So, I think everybody who follows the Hounds and those who listen to the show are likely followers of the Hounds. You know what happened this weekend. As a result, Romeo Parks is no longer with the team. He's been released from the Hounds. He's actually been suspended by the USL from playing for the rest of the season and playoffs. That came down today. It's a sensitive topic. We don't want to spend too much time on it because, like we said, you know, our listeners range all the way from youth players all the way through, you know, Steel Army members to players themselves. And so we all know what happened. It's a regretful event that happened. We're happy to hear that Carl Wimette is okay and that he's able to continue playing. It was terrible that the incident happened on a night where, you know, the team was celebrating breast cancer survivors and it was superhero night and there was a bounce house and there were lots of kids there to see it. And so, yeah, I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's simultaneously you have a lot to say on it. And at the same time, you don't, it's a tough thing, at least for me, to kind of wrap my head around. And so because of this, as I was kind of thinking about leading up to this show, yeah, I didn't know how to necessarily articulate all of my thoughts that were happening on this. Like you said, it's a sensitive topic. It's a difficult topic to get to, and one that no one ever wants to have the discussion about. But we feel like we have to at least address it somewhat. So, I guess yeah. I mean, what lead the. Where do you want to go from here, Mike? How do you want to?
Well, I mean, I think so. Obviously, like I said, Parks is no longer with the team. There's been a lot of discussion on Twitter, and it seems like that the resounding sentiment is that it was the right call. I think that
the right call to terminate his contract.
Right, to terminate his contract. I think that for a team like the Hounds, with the fan base, it's very important that these players be respectable role models for the kids in the academy, for kids in the area,
following up on that. I mean, I think it also sends out a message that no one's bigger than the club. You know, right. There's no one player that's more important than the values that the club hold and the direction that the club wants to go in. I mean, so in that respect, you know, it was a kind of no nonsense. No, this is what it is. We don't care if you're our leading goal scorer or who you are, or if you haven't scored any goals. This is what happens when this action occurs. And I thought that was a pretty strong stance from the club.
It's a strong stance, and I think it's a really good lesson for any player out there that no matter how good you are not bigger than the team. And so, you know, this was an action that sort of happened by one player. You know, Jason Cutney, who, you know, former CEO of the team, tweeted out, you know, been with the Riverhounds a long time. I've learned that faulted actions of one will not break the integrity or drive of the club. They're bigger than any one. And, you know, that's if there's a lesson to be learned in any of this, it's that, you know, you got to keep your head on your shoulders. It's a game. Above all else, it's a game, and people are there to watch it and to have fun, and you can't let emotion, you know, take over too much. A few other quotes just to throw out there. Team owner Tuffy Schallenberg put out, I want to apologize to the fans of the Red Bulls 2 organization, as well as Carl we met, for what transpired at the game last night. Romeo's actions are not representative of what our organization and its academy stands for in regards to helping promote and grow the sport in not only the greater Allegheny area, but also nationwide. Coach Steffens followed up with, as I stated last night, this is an unfortunate situation and one that was embarrassing for not only myself, but also the staff in the organization. The discipline being handled out is one that we as a staff consider to be fair and completely justified. The actions were not representative of what this team stands for as a whole. So again, it's the club before any one individual player.
I don't know what else to add to that. I don't know if there is much other to add to it. I will say, I guess, I don't know, what was your, it being completely honest and fair, what was your first, like, initial reaction to seeing the news break? So, I mean, like, personally, and I'm not, you know, I this is, I think, still a good decision, this course of action taking place in this whole situation. As we mentioned, no one's bigger than the club. And you have to stand behind your values, even when it's a difficult situation to do. That's why they're your core values, and you need to stand behind them. But I will say, I mean, you know, seeing it in within the first second, I mean, my gut reaction was a little surprised, only because, I mean,
your reaction to how it was handled by the team.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. As far as the contract being terminated, I've watched a lot of football and a lot of different leagues, and you see nasty stuff, and I'm not trying to, I guess, like, pardon any of that, but I'm just gauging how everyone else seems to react to those incidents. I mean, you see players going in with very nasty intent with, you know, various tackles. You know, we've seen biting events. I'm pretty close to that thing. I'm a Liverpool fan, so I've seen Suarez bite a couple people. And it's hard to compare. I don't know if you can compare, if this is kind of an oranges to apples kind of thing, being at the USL, maybe a different kind of tier. But at least in those situations, you know, apologies come out. The club maybe reprimands the player, and that's kind of it. So I just, from that kind of experience that I've had, I was a little shocked at how quickly and how strongly the kind of verdict came out. But at the same time, you know, as we talked about before, I think it's, you know, it's justified.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there were a few things that played into that as well. One, this made international news. Like, I have sort of Google alerts set up, so that anytime somebody mentions Riverhounds, you know, I get an email about it really anywhere on the internet. And I had emails pouring in, you know, 20 different languages from all over the world that, you know, it was this incident and people were talking about it. So I think that in a lot of ways, you know, the Riverhounds want notoriety, but we also don't want to be known as, you know, sort of a dirty team. And so you feel that urge. You have to act swiftly to sort of show that stance behind your values, as you said.
Was that your initial reaction? I'm just curious. The like, what was your first gut initial reaction before logic took over and your actual feelings and all that kind of stuff took over?
I mean, honestly, my initial reaction was a bit of shock, that, you know, something like that actually happened. And so yeah. I didn't really have a reaction one way or another. I had a feeling that there would at least be some sort of punishment, where, you know, at least out for half the season. But I in the back of my mind, I sort of had a feeling that, you know,
it could have been more.
I'm not surprised that the contract was terminated either.
My second thought was, man, we have to talk about this, don't we?
I know. I know.
I don't know. It's never easy to talk about these things. So,
as some people pointed out on Twitter, we picked a heck of a season to start this podcast. but you know, here's the thing. As people have said, this is one incident in a long history for the club, and what we hope to be a long history going forward for the club. And as much as we don't want to talk about it, as bad as it feels to be a supporter of this team right now, considering that, you know, we ultimately lost this game, we're six games into the season, we still don't have a win, and then to cap it all off now, our top scorer is now gone from the team, you sort of feel like, where do we go from here? Like, the one shining light that we had this season was, yes, we're not doing well, but you know what? Parks is creeping up the leaderboard in terms of goals, so we have our hat to hang on that, but now we don't have that, and so it's, where do we go from here? And I think that
I think it's important to note too, I mean, you know, we're, I don't know, I have a feeling the kind of audience that listened to this and us doing this, I mean, we don't support the Riverhounds because they're, you know, always ripping teams apart and always at the top of the league. You know, we support the Riverhounds. They're our local club. You know, we want to just support our local club. And you don't not support a local club because of incidences like this. You maybe not support your local club when your club react negatively after incidences like this.
Right.
And we can absolutely say that at least, you know, I don't know, it seems that, you know, from the reactions we're seeing around social media and from the feelings that we've kind of just talked about here, it seems like everyone's kind of on board with, you know, staying behind this decision. And so, yeah, things are tough, but, you know, you're never going to be a fan and always have
right.
blue skies and green grass.
So. I mean, the prime example is just look at some of these other teams in Pittsburgh. You know, the Pirates have had a long stretch where they've been terrible, and now they're starting to get into form. You know, making a run at some things last year. The Steelers have had stretches where they've been awful. And then, you know, they make Super Bowl runs. And the same thing with the Penguins. You know, before Crosby came along, we were in a major drought. And so I think all teams sort of have this up and down and up and down. And I think that for some of us, we often have sort of the short-term memory. And we just think back to, you know, the beginning of this season. And we forget that, you know, the Hounds were able to make a run at the playoffs last year. And, you know, this is really the third time in 4 years that we've started the first six games winless. And I think it's easy to forget that. But there's a lot of teams that start slow and can go on a tear. And really, it's not so much how you start the season, it's how you end the season, the form that you're in when you end the season. And so really, it's how does this team sort of pick itself up by its bootstraps and move forward as a club? And as terrible as an event this was, this could also be the defining moment for the rest of the players to pull together and say, you know what, this isn't who we are. We're going into this. We're going in this together, and we're pushing forward, and we're going to make some noise.
Right, and even just kind of following up on your previous point, you know, it's not how you start the season, it's how you end the season. I mean, you hear time and time again, look, all you need to do really is put yourself within striking distance when it comes to the end of the season. As long as you're there or thereabouts, as long as you're hanging around and giving yourself a chance or an opportunity, that's really all you can ask for going into the, you know, last quarter of the season. And we absolutely have enough time to do that, especially with what that, you know, that stat you threw out there, what, the past 4 out of 5 years or something?
Third time out of 4 years. Yeah.
I mean, so there you go. Yeah. You know, it's not something you want to get used to, and it's not something you want to get good at getting over, but,
yeah,
you know, we're in this situation and we have kind of been here before, so.
The silver lining is we're still not in last place in the league. Montreal or FC Montreal are actually 0-6-0. So not only do they not have any wins, they don't have any ties. So they are sitting on 0 points, whereas we at least have 3. We're close. They're 1 win away from being tied with us on points. But yeah. So let's quickly just run through the game. We're not going to go into a lot of details because obviously the event really overshadowed everything. The Hounds ultimately lost. We played, I don't even think we mentioned, we played New York Red Bulls too. They came to town. They were at Highmark Stadium. We ultimately lost the game 3-1. The Hounds interestingly rolled out a 4-4-2, which, Kev, we were talking about that we might like to see.
Yes.
They went with Gilstrap.
Listening.
Yeah, they went with Gilstrap and goal. Yeah, they're listening to us. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what's happening. That's why this whole incident happened. They were listening to us.
We should just stop.
We're just going to stop. Yeah. Show's over. Cut it. They went with Hollingsworth, Hunt, Campbell, and Schaefer across the back. Maloto, Kerr, Green, and Russell across the middle. And then Parks and Herzog up top, which we had said, you know, it'd be great to see those two up top. It paid off. And, you know, the first 10 minutes, Parks scored the first goal of the game. And then, you know, just to show some resiliency, New York scored 2 minutes later. Abong, who we had mentioned, gets regular minutes with their first team. He equalized for them. And then there was lots of back and forth in the game. Ultimately, New York got the go-ahead goal in the 72nd minute, sealed it with a third goal 10 minutes later. The game itself, you know, outside of the incident, seemed to leave a bad taste in everyone's mouth. Apparently, at one point, Hunter was sort of going back and forth with some of the members of the Steel Army. You know, apparently during one of the injuries, he went over and he was talking to people to his credit and try to make up for it. He tweeted after the game, "Apologies to all of our fans, especially the Steel Army, for a subpar performance tonight. You all deserve better. Thanks always for what you do." So, a lot of things going on in this game. And like I said, you can sort of take it and you can get down on yourself and you can throw the season away, or you can look at it and say, it's only six games. We've got the rest of the season. How are we going to fix it?
And yeah, I mean, it sounds cliche, but I mean, you literally only have two options after this. Yeah. You let it define you and the season becomes a wash, or you go the other direction with it. I mean, so now's the time to see what the club's made of, what the players are made of, what the coach is made of, and what we as fans are made of.
In no amount of talking, you know, me and Kev could sit here and talk until we're blue in the face. We could be on Twitter having conversations with people until we're blue in the face. But ultimately, it's not going to be us that turn this team around. It's those guys in the locker room that are going to, you know, something's going to switch, and they're going to pull themselves up. And honestly, I mean, I think we have the players to do it. Now it's just a matter of whether or not to do it. And all we can do as fans is stand behind them and cheer and, you know, keep in the back of our minds that what happened there this weekend is not a reflection on all of the players. No matter what the media says, this was not about, you know, the 11 guys on the field and everybody on the bench and the coaching staff and ownership. It was about one player. And that, in part, is why the team acted so swiftly to address it. And now it's time for everybody else on the team to step up and really see what we're made of. We have the players to fill the holes. Now we just need to see if they do it. There's really nothing much else to say about this. You know, we're going to take a break. And then when we come back, we're just going to talk a little bit about, you know, some ways that we can move forward from this. And we'll briefly touch on the next game this weekend, which we'll do a full preview of later this week. So we'll be right back.
We'd love to hear from you. Find us on Twitter at Mongols, on Facebook at Mongols, and email us at howl@mongols.com. Any questions, comments, or reactions read on air could win you your own Riverhounds jersey. Thanks!
All right, and we're back. So, Kev, you know, we talked about in the last segment, we're now 0-3-3. You know, and like I said, there are a lot of teams in history that have shown that you can start completely flat and you can find your form and you can go on a tear. The most recent example, at least, you know, within, I don't even want to say in the United States, but they actually play in Montreal, was Montreal in the MLS last year. They started terribly. They were at the bottom of the table. And they got into a form and went on a tear, and they were the team that nobody wanted to play come the playoffs. So if you find that right system, if you find the right combination of players, if you find that passion, there's nothing that can stop you as a team.
I mean, hey, just look at Leicester City. I mean, they won the
Boom.
Premier League.
Boom. Yes.
I think I read somewhere that it was they were like this can't be right. But
it was like 5,001 odds.
Yeah, 5,001 odds or something like that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, yeah, it's nuts. I mean, so, yeah, I mean, you're never – I think only you as a team can define whether you're down and out. And no, yeah. I mean, so as far as, I don't know, maybe talking a bit tactically about things, as far as where we go from here. I mean, once again, I don't know. I kind of, this was a theme I had, I think, in the last two podcasts. I think we just need to get back to being difficult to beat. So kind of need to stop the bleeding. I mean, so I was actually really optimistic heading into this Red Bulls game, even though they're one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference and in the league, really. You know, we showed our quality against Louisville and Charleston or Charlotte. Oh, I always get those two mixed up.
Charleston, yes.
Charleston. So, you know, we've shown we could do it. And that's why I think I was optimistic coming into this game, especially being home and everything. So yeah, we just need to get back and build a strong foundation, be strong at the back, and just make it difficult to play us again. And then I think once we kind of provide that platform, then we can actually start looking at getting 3 points on the board. And I probably mentioned this before too, but you know, if you know, I mean, so we let 3 goals in against Red Bulls. It was 2 against Louisville, 1 against Charlotte. Charleston. I'm going to say Charleston from now on.
I can't criticize you because I did it that entire last show. So, yeah.
So, you know, we're not exactly keeping clean sheets. And if you're a striker, if you get a chance, that just weighs a bit more on your head thinking, you know what, I have to make this chance count now because I don't feel confident enough that we're not going to let in any goals. So we need to score today. You know what I mean? If we want to get any kind of result, we need to score today. And that's just kind of added pressure, that extra thought in a striker's mind or whoever's attacking the ball just makes that chance a bit harder. Maybe they snap at the chance and it doesn't come off cleanly. And so, yeah, I think we just need to stay cool in front of goal and kind of, you know, build our confidence back up, not only defensively, but going forward.
And I think that's the tough thing because, you know, as much as sport is about skills and individual players, there's a massive, massive psychological component to it where, you know, goalies are famous for, you know, sort of psyching themselves out in all sports, not just soccer, hockey. You know, you look at any one of the Penguins goalies, and if they just go into a mental slump, it's like, what is going on? You know, they have all the talent in the world, but if they're in a mental slump, it's really hard to break out of. That goes for any player on the field. If psychologically you go into a game thinking you have no chance, your team doesn't have a chance. And so how do we move forward from something like this? I wasn't even thinking about this before the show, but your point of stopping the bleeding, I think, and being difficult to play against, I think we need something that we can rally around. We need the small wins. You know, I think going out and saying, you know, we're going to beat a team 4-3 is, in some ways, it's going to put a Band-Aid on the wound, but it's not going to heal the wound. I think the idea of going into, you know, some place like Cincinnati or, you know, we're going to see the Red Bulls again, I think, in 2 games. So, you know, the turnaround's pretty quick. But saying, okay, I don't care how many goals we score, let's not let in any. And so as a team, you get that mental, okay, our goal is to just not let in any goals. Get those small psychological victories of, okay, we got a 0-0 draw. We at least didn't let in any goals. There's our small victory.
Got a shutout. Got a clean sheet. Now, I mean, that's something that you can definitely rally around.
Yeah. And now you build from there. But it's one of those things, you know, the whole how do you eat an elephant? Like, we're not going to turn around tomorrow and become world beaters. I mean, we might. That'd be awesome. But but realistically, from where this team is at psychologically, we need those small wins. And I really like the idea of saying, let's just be the team that's tough to play against. We've talked about going into this, or we've talked about for these past 6 games, how we don't necessarily have an identity. We've said, you know, the message from the team is we want to be the team that sort of keeps the ball on the ground, keeps possession, knocks it around. But more often than not, we've had more success by being a counterattacking style team. So what better way than to find an identity than through, you know, an event like this and saying, okay, here's this is our identity right now.
Yeah, two things. I mean, one, I think it is very much time to kind of, I mean, this isn't in a negative way at all. It's to just kind of embrace this kind of, you know, classic blue collar Pittsburgh culture and kind of, and start putting in, you know, some effort. So it's starting just outrunning the other team. We're just going to outrun you. We're going to hustle to every ball. We're going to have 2 people on you. We're not going to give you a second. to stay on the ball, and that just helps the entire game, but especially defensively, and it helps being difficult to beat. And I had a second point, and now I can't recall it. I got too excited about.
Well, no, I think this is a really interesting conversation, and I would love to get everybody's thoughts on Twitter or via email. If you could pick an identity for this team, a style of play, and you could look at them and you could feel proud of it and you could say, that's my team. You know, is it a team that presses at the other team? Is it a team that plays shutdown defense? Is it, you know, as Kevin pointed, is it just a team that just, you know, busts their butt no matter what's going on, whether we're winning or losing, that you will get behind and say, you know what, we may have lost that game, but this is my team. Like, they represent who I am. I am proud of this team one way or another. Let us know, because I think this is a very interesting conversation, and I think this is a very critical turning point for the team as well.
So you reminded me of my second point. It was the fact that it was, you know, so we might, I don't know, have this philosophy that for whatever reason we want at being this kind of possession team and all this kind of stuff. But at the same time, you can't really, but, you know, so this is tough. Talking in circles, you don't want to shoehorn a specific philosophy onto a team that doesn't necessarily fit that style. So, for example, say you're a completely new manager coming in and your entire life you've played 4-4-2 counterattacking direct football soccer. But for whatever reason, you know, the players you have just don't fit that philosophy. You can't really expect to impose that philosophy on the team and still get results. I mean, so we might have this club ethos about possession football and keeping the ball on the ground, but if something works, you know, I see no reason, especially now, to go away from it. I mean, we need to kind of go back to something that we're comfortable with, something we know works, and something that we can know is repeatable and consistent. And something that we say, yeah, we can do this in and out. You know, we don't want to keep relying on 25 yard shots or in great individual efforts, because you know you can't really expect that game in game out. You want to see kind of reproducible goals and an idea behind how we build up play and how we get that goal.
Yeah, and you know, to your point, yes, we're 0-3-3. We don't have any wins, so it's difficult to sit back and say, well, this is what's worked for us so far, so we should just keep doing more of that. But I think there are a lot of positives and a lot of things that this team does really well. You know, the few times that we've put goals in the back of the net, it's been almost a counterattacking style where we build up from the back, we have patience, we move the ball up, we sort of play it back, and then we go over the top and we let our guys run to it. Rochester had a ton of success, and I'm not saying that we should play like Rochester. This was how Rochester played last year and was able to get through the entire season, I think, with only one loss, where they were just shut down defense and their only chances came from over the top balls, and they had guys running onto them. And
I think there's something to be said about, you know, everyone thinks and has this grand idea of how great this kind of fluid attacking team that, you know, goes into a different formation every game depending on who they're setting up against and, you know, plays a different style of game every time that they're going up, you know, a certain kind of opposition. That's great in an ideal world. But, I mean, going back to what you just said about Rochester, they had their one thing that they were really good at, and they became extremely difficult to beat. Even you knew what they were going to do, but it didn't really matter. So, and especially, you know, I haven't seen too many teams play with a wide variety of different styles and formations and all this other stuff. I mean, it's an extremely difficult thing to do, especially when you have a bunch of new players that you're bringing in,
right?
Which the rounds I feel too. I mean, I think it's
I totally agree with you. I think it's one of those things too that we need to keep in mind, is that this is the USL. So if you're playing in the EPL, if you're playing in La Liga, even to a certain extent, if you're playing in the MLS, it's very easy to take the players you have and sort of game plan for the teams that you're playing. You have the talent on the teams and you can tell them, okay, this game we're going to play, you know, a 4-2-3-1 or whatever it is we're going to do, which I don't even know if that matters.
I was going to see if you could do the math.
Yeah, yeah,
you
got it right. And I know that Kevin and I have been harping on different formations, but a lot of that just stems from seeing how other teams play and trying to break them down and trying to understand how best we can go about attacking them. But I think in a league like the USL, where, you know, the Red Bulls are a prime example of that, the game before this game they played with us, they had 9 players from their first team in the team, and they've made it very, very clear that their goal with Red Bull 2 has nothing to do with winning. The fact that they're winning is a pure side effect of just their academy system, going up through the USL, going up to the pro team. Their number one goal is to get players ready for the pro team.
Players should know what's expected of them in every position. So it becomes that much easier. I know this didn't happen with Red Bulls, they both played, but say you're Isaiah Schaefer and you're coming in to fill for Drew Russell's spot at right back. There shouldn't be any surprises about what's expected for you at that position. If there is, your job's just that much more difficult.
Right.
So getting back to this, taking the example from Red Bulls, I'm certainly not advocating this for the situation that the Riverhounds are in, but in that situation, if you make it clear what's expected in every position, it's that much more easy to make 9 changes because right. Everyone coming in knows exactly what's expected of them in that position. So, that's just, I guess, another thing that makes it that much more difficult now going forward and thinking about how we want to play and all this other stuff.
But, yeah, I guess back to my point is that the USL is not filled with talent that even if they can identify the system that we're playing, that they can come in and adjust and beat the system. I mean, there are a few teams that may be able to do that, but at the same time, if you're sound in your system, you're going to make it much more difficult for the other team than they're going to make it on you. And so, totally, I'll raise my hand as one who keeps saying, like, oh, we should try this system. We could try this system. But I think that what would serve this team well, and Kevin, you nailed it, is let's figure out who we are. Let's do it right now, and let's go from here. Let's get that small victory.
Consistency.
Right, let's get a draw. Let's not pretend to be something we're not. Okay. Yes, we would love to see, players working the ball around in this beautiful buildup, like that goal that we saw in Louisville, where it was like 4 different players involved with the attack and Parks was wide open to bury it. That was beautiful. But at the same time, when we look back on this season, we're going to remember ultimately how far the Riverhounds got, more so than how beautiful the game was played. They could play the most beautiful soccer in the world and lose every game and we'll go, what were they doing wrong? Whereas they could play terrible soccer and win out, and we'll go, we're the champions of the world. Like, who cares?
At the beginning of this season, Leicester City were the exception, not the norm. So someone at the bottom of the table, they're not usually going to play this beautiful football. I mean, and even, if anyone knows anything about Leicester City, even Leicester City weren't playing like Arsenal or Barcelona, who just keep the ball. They break with pace and they finish their chances and they have, it doesn't hurt to have people like Mahrez and Vardy up top, but, so even they who go on this great run, they weren't trying to, I think, do anything that was outside of themselves.
Right.
And they kind of knew what they were about and they just did it really well.
And I think the other thing, that we can sort of hang our hats on again is the fact that we haven't had a lot of chances, but the few chances we've had, I'd love to see, unfortunately, like I said, the USL doesn't keep great stats, but our shots to goal percentage has got to be pretty high compared to a lot of these teams that we've watched who have a ton of shots, but most of them aren't even on frame. So if we're finishing our chances and, we're going over the top and we're getting a few chances and we're putting them in, maybe that's our identity. We have the players to do that. Maybe now you have to move some pieces around, obviously, now that Parks is out, but yeah.
And then, now I'm really confused because I can tell with how quickly we're talking and how loudly we're talking. We kind of talked ourselves into this like happy frenzy. And I feel like once we step away from this, we're going to be like, wait, are we genuinely like happy and optimistic about this? Or did we just kind of talk ourselves into this? Anyway, I just thought, I noticed that. I was like, my breath's getting quick. I'm like, yeah. And then, I don't know. Now I want to take a step back and reassess.
Well, I think part of the thing with doing this podcast as well is we have the perspective, like I said, coming into this season, I hadn't really watched any games other than Riverhounds. And I didn't watch them with the analytical eye that I'm watching the games now. And I think going back and watching a lot of these teams, you know, when we do these preview shows, I often go back and I watch the games that the team that we're playing against coming up most recently played. So I'm watching a game that doesn't have the Riverhounds in it. So we're seeing a lot of soccer being played by teams that aren't the Riverhounds. And I think the most encouraging thing is that every single one of these teams is beatable. There hasn't been a team that I've watched and went, ah, crap. Like, there's no way we're going to beat this team. And so I think that's the reason why, yes, we haven't won a game yet, but it's difficult for me to not be optimistic, because looking at the players on this team and looking at what other teams are doing, nobody out there is like this miraculous world beater that no matter who you are, you're going to get crushed.
Yeah, and oddly, I mean, the teams that it's kind of been flipped. So the teams I expected to maybe lose to, we got draws, and the teams I expected for us to have decent results, you know, we end up losing. You just made me think of that right now, especially the OCB game. That was tough to swallow.
You keep bringing up that OCB, man.
I can't let it. We were so, we, what? I think we call it like 5-0, 4-0.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We need to.
I thought it was going to be much larger. Hold on. I'm pulling up the schedule right now to see when we play them again, because we're going to circle that.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Kevin is ready. Where are they? September 3rd.
That's too far.
Yeah, in Florida. So yeah.
Well, maybe we can beat some of the fall weather and get down to Florida.
Snap! Don't get my hopes up. Stop that right now. Okay. Yeah, you know, we've talked a decent amount here, sort of about, you know, optimism. I think, you know, it's terrible.
I mean, at the same time, let's be fair. Let's call a spade a spade. It's not easy to be optimistic in this situation. And right. I'm not necessarily saying like, yeah, we should all be optimistic. I mean, we're in a tough spot. Absolutely.
I mean, I keep thinking back to the cliched line from The Dark Knight, where Harvey Dent's standing up there and he says, "The night is darkest, always just before the dawn, but the dawn is coming." And there are people out there who have proved that to be wrong, but for some reason that line is stuck with me.
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
It doesn't make any sense at all, but you know what? The night is darkest just before the dawn. And so the dawn is coming. This team has what it takes to get out of this hole. Whether or not they do that is anybody's guess, but I think that you can take two sides of things. You know, we could sit here and beat ourselves up and be like, well, what are we going to talk about for the next, you know, 48 shows for the rest of the season? I don't know. It's going to be terrible. Or we can sit here and say, this team has the ability to do it. And the only way they're going to make it happen is the only way we're going to make it happen. And that is one game at a time. We cannot jump ahead to the end of the season. So the team needs to buckle down. You take this game as if it's the last game of the season. You hunker down. And you go for it. And, you know, Kev and I are going to be there every step of the way. I know the Steel Army is going to be there every step of the way. And we hope that the rest of the fans are going to be there every step of the way, because this is a city and this is a team that is used to dragging ourselves up from our knees and pushing forward. And I almost feel like, you know, the Star Spangled Banner, like, playing behind me.
I wanted to, like, have a violin or something playing orchestral music.
But it's true. So don't get down, especially not this week. Although this week we got a tough test coming up. just flip it just like that. Done. All right. We have FC Cincinnati, who we're playing this Saturday at 4 p.m. in Cincinnati. We got to get pumped for this game, regardless of what's going on. Cincinnati is trying desperately. So this is Cincinnati's first season, okay? And Kevin and I will get into this in a lot more detail on our Wednesday show, where we actually do the full preview of Cincinnati. Cincinnati has been selling out their stadium. I think they're hoping to go for a record sellout for this game. And a lot of the stuff they do is really just to sell tickets. They have, I've said this before, they've made no secret that they're trying to get to the MLS. So their goal is, let's sell out as many games as we can, show the MLS that we have this huge fan base, and they'll give us a chance to move up the MLS. Great. You know, if that works for you, that's fantastic. We've already said we're going to have another show. Now that, you know, my son's musical is over, I have a lot more time to devote to. Let's actually have a sit down and talk about all that. Anyway, Cincinnati has dubbed this game as, quote unquote, the rivalry game, trying to make a rivalry with us. You know, I don't.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. It's like, on one hand, I'm like, the competitive side of me is like, yeah, bring it on. Like, let's do this. And on the other hand, I'm like, why is this? I'm
not a fan of sort of artificial rivalries. I think that those are sort of born out of the blood, sweat, and tears of games past.
Yeah, but, that's really well put, actually. Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, we have a history with Cincinnati, thanks to the Steelers, thanks to the Pirates. And, you know, if adding another rivalry with the city through soccer is going to, you know, get more fans interested and and give us an opportunity to really just, you know, crush Cincinnati and, you know, leave them just a shadow of what they once were as a city.
No, wait a minute. We just said we can't be putting unnecessary expectations. Let's be hard to beat in this game.
Yes. No, I'm saying
boring party killing Kevin.
I'm saying long term, if they want a rivalry, then let's give them something to make a rivalry out of. Let's go in there and, you know, they want to sell out their stadium, that's great. Let's go in there and post a 0-0 draw.
And just make it a quiet stadium.
They want a rivalry. Let's start this rivalry off right and just shut them up. And we don't even have to win. It's just, you know what? We're going to stack all 11 guys right on the goal line and you have fun. and they will hate us and we will love every minute of it. And it'll stop the bleeding and we'll go from there. So, yeah. Like I said, we'll have the full preview on this show later this week. Send us your thoughts, questions, comments, anything about this show. You know, we talked about the style of play. What is it that you would like to see from the Hounds that would make you proud, that would make you look at this team and just make your heart swell and say, you know, aside from the obvious. Obviously, we are all, if you're listening to the show, you're a fan of the Hounds. But what is it that you would like to see that, you know, I don't want to say would bring a tear to your eye, but it's this, you know, I love it.
And like, what would you expect? How would you expect the team to bounce back in the situation? If you were, you know, kind of leading this club, what do you want to see as far as, you know, how the Hounds carry out the rest of the season?
Yeah.
I think that'd be good.
And send us your thoughts on Cincy. You know, send us your quote unquote hate mail. We would love to read some, you know, letters and things to Cincinnati fans on the air on our next preview show on Wednesday. So get those to us, either at Mongols on Twitter, or you can hit us up Howl@Mongols on email. Kev, anything else you want to talk about?
I think that's it.
Awesome. All right. Well, for Kev, I am Mike. We will talk to you later this week. So stay tuned. And like I said, talk to you very, very soon.
Cheers.